Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. Oh, my. In the studio with me, we have Ted Hatfield and my co-host, Mark Tobin. We were both talking about I had to run a heater in my pickup truck this morning. It was great.
I love it. I tell you, this weather is just invigorating. This is my favorite time of year.
Oh, boy.
And this summer, it just lasted too long. I mean, it all the way up till Friday, 90-degree weather this past week, and that's just miserable. And you're trying to hunt.
Yeah.
In 90, it just didn't seem right.
It's not right.
Everything is right now. I love this cool weather. What a great weekend to get outdoors.
Yesterday we went out after the wild and sometimes evasive teal duck. Me and my boy, which boy he can shoot, and Andy Burnham. We almost hit some. It was fun. It wasn't a great hunt, but yeah, it was.
Did some ducks show up ahead of this cold front?
Yeah, there was a lot of migrators, a lot of new ducks coming
really
around,
cool.
And we had a giggle and a laugh and. Can't hit them like I used to, but I sure had fun grinding holes in the air up there on the deal. This fishing, now this should send the little shockwave into the community at Truman Lake, especially, or any lake, but colder air,
water. Shorter days.
The fish woke up this morning and said, I'm hungry. I better get to going because winter's around the corner.
That's right. The days are getting shorter. The water's cooling down, so it's really good. Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. I'm hearing conflicting reports. Some of the Kansas side seems like it's a little slower to respond, but I've also heard that some of those crappie on the Kansas side are starting to get into their fall patterns.
Are they?
Moving away from the main lake and moving up into the coves and creeks and shallower water. And when they're moving, it's a little bit harder to make connection with them. But Truman has just been on fire, continues to be on fire. Mm-hmm. They're relatively shallow. They're still hanging around their summer patterns, the main lake flats. Early in the day, you can catch them maybe even as shallow as 4 to 5 feet. And as the day moves on, they move out a little bit deeper. But still, 10, 12 feet deep, maybe 14 feet deep out in 25 foot of water as the day goes on. But I'm still hearing minnows are better than jigs.
Yeah, there.
I know.
Dick, my brother Dick guides on the White River down Flippin, Arkansas for trout, went over to the Norfolk, which is just 20, 30 minutes drive out of Flippin. He said he caught 40 trout in an hour.
Whoa, man, that's awesome.
He said you just couldn't believe it. He said the water is as clear as he's ever seen it. And he uses those flies. He put four of them on a dime. That's how small they are. And he said it was the best he's had down there in years.
Wow.
So, I guess the daylight, the darkness, the different change, fish naturally go on a feeding frenzy, I assume. And, that's what's going to happen with these hybrids.
Oh, yeah, and the white bass, too. And now we're getting some weather changes, which we've sorely needed. And that means we have windy days. And windy days are just fantastic for the whites and the hybrids. You just get up along any windy bank, a windy point, and they're very aggressive. And a lot of times you can catch them on topwater baits, little Pop R's or Zara Puppies, little topwater. Oh, you talk about fun. I'm telling you. Anything on topwater's fun, but white bass and hybrids, they're just. And some people will tie a little trailer on some of those, maybe put a foot of line on the back of the Pop R or Zara Puppy and put a little jig on there, and you'll catch two at a time, every time. Just don't be real quick to reel that lure in, and it's just a blast. What a great time to get kids and people that don't. What in the world? Fred is showing me a picture on his phone. That is a giant catfish.
That was caught last. Jeff Martinez and Casey were out to fish in a tournament, and that wasn't the biggest fish taken in the
You're
tournament.
Kidding. That's a big one. That looks well over 50, 60 pounds.
83 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Ted, you got to take a look. Ted Hatfield is here with us. You got to take a look. That's out of the Missouri River, a blue cat, last weekend. And I think one was 94, beat him out.
Oh, my gosh. Those are huge fish. Huge.
That's big fish. I mean, absolutely unbelievable.
Ted, I know you're the gunman, Hatfield firearms and whatnot. But do you know, since we are talking about fishing, do you know where most of the fish is found?
In the water.
Well, I mean, most of the fish is found between the eye and the tail.
He has every Saturday has one of these forget me not jokes.
Thank you, Jed.
Sorry, Jed, about that. You've got into this trout fishing thing, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. You know, I like to go on all of it, Fred. A couple of years ago, I went down to Costa Rica and went tarpon fishing down there.
Oh no!
And my dad was a fanatic tarpon fisherman, but as a kid, I never really got to catch any big tarpon. You know, I'd get to go with him, and so I went down there, and in the first hour, I had three tarpon on at the same time.
What?
Wow. And you know, all weighed between 80 and 120 pounds.
What do you mean three at the same time?
Well, my partner took his kid down there with him, so we didn't. I had one boat to myself and a guide. So we went out there, and he put out two lines. I put out a line, and all of a sudden, we had three tarpon on.
Wow.
So when I got the first one in, you know, which was quite a fight.
Oh, sure.
There's two more jumping.
Wow.
So I went to the next rod, and then the next rod, and I
oh,
know.
Oh, no.
Well, I know I'm not going to have a heart attack, because I would have on that trip, you know. that killed me.
That was dead. A good stress test.
Yeah, and so I kind of filled out on, got my tarpon Jones over with. If I never catch another one, that's fine. Because I've had plenty.
Yeah,
I
love go fishing. Yeah. I've heard so many people say it's hard to get a hook set in them. It doesn't sound like it.
Well, it is, but you know this about hooks nowadays. They were using circle hooks.
Sure.
And actually dead bait on the bottom. I mean, you fish for a tarpon like you do a catfish. And with a circle hook, we never missed hooking the fish. Never.
I'll be darned. Wow.
Where a straight hook, yeah, you'd yeah. have them on 10, you'd have on 10 fish before you'd ever hook one.
Right. That's what I've heard.
The first tarpon I caught on a fly rod, 152-pound tarpon.
Wow.
And it got to the point where I didn't know if I was having fun or not.
Yeah.
And it was 100 degrees, and they were pouring water down the back of my neck, and the fish, thinking, please give up. This is getting ridiculous. I mean, I am sweating like you cannot believe. And about the time I got him up to take kind of a look at him, he decided he didn't want to be there. And away he went, and he ran off about 100 yards of line, and I'm going, oh, come on. Okay, this is kind of like having sex with a skunk. You just don't know how much of a good thing you can take here, you know. And it was just terrible. And then he'd go out there and jump, and you go, well, maybe I'll throw the hook, you know, and I can act sad, but finally got him up and got him in on the deal. But wow, what an experience. The other good fishing experience, when we were up on the Kenai and I caught that big king that time, you know, it was just the energy that goes through the rod into your feet. You scoot your feet on the floor of the boat because
it's
got
amazing.
So much energy in them. You know? Mm-hmm.
We did a television show down in Costa Rica when we were doing the American Outdoorsman television show. And one of the guys that was with us, it was a sponsor that we had, and one of their PR guys came out with us. And he was probably in his latter 20s, and he was in really good shape. And we were heading out to look for sailfish, and I saw off in the distance a bunch of white water, and I pointed it out to our captain, and he got all excited, and he turned the boat and headed toward it. Well, it was a bunch of dolphin that were feeding, and he said, get ready. They got bait out two rods. And he said, as soon as they come past us, drop those baits in the water, and you'll get a tuna. Those tuna follow underneath those dolphin.
Yeah.
And so we did, and we dropped down and immediately got hooked up. And it was the PR guy that took the rod. He fought that thing for almost 2 hours. And normally when you get a tuna like that, they'll pass the rod off to other people in the boat. But he didn't want to do that. He wanted to land the fish himself. He landed the fish 2 hours later, and they were doing the same thing, pouring water on him, giving him water to drink while he's doing this. Finally got that thing in there, and it was about a 70, 75-pound yellowfin tuna, and he was done. He didn't pick up a rod the rest of the trip. He was so exhausted. He went and laid down and slept the rest of that day and had no desire to catch another fish after that. For 3 days, he didn't fish. No, that's too much like work.
Oh,
you can have that.
if you're going to go out, I suppose that would be the way to go out, you know. My goodness, you know, hook him up and have a stroke or fall over or whatever you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, that's right.
Man.
Those tuna, they swim from the day they are born to the day they die. They never stop. They never rest.
Yeah.
They're an amazing fish.
Yeah.
Very, very fun. But
very edible fish.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Raw.
Well, we got to talk shotguns. We're going to talk shotguns here today. But Ted brought a shotgun in this studio this morning. We were looking at it, oohing and aahing, and I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. It's going to revolutionize the shooting sports industry. It's an AK-47-looking type shotgun.
12-gauge shotgun.
12-gauge shotgun with a clip in it. And it you know, we're too old to probably adjust. Me and you, we've got our head down the stock all our life, but these younger fellows will own one of these. This is going to be quite a gun.
Well, what we did, I mean, what this particular shotgun, like a lot of the other tactical shotguns that are on the market, normally comes with a set of AK-40 or a set of AR-15 sights on there, flip-up sights, that kind of thing. Well, you know, Fred, I mean, that's not the way to shoot a shotgun. So what we developed is a stand-up rib, a regular ventilated rib on this thing that is the right height and the right taper. When you throw it up to your shoulder, you're looking right
you're
down
looking
the rib.
Right down it.
So we took this and actually went through a little process of patterning to get it just exactly right, just like a trap rib.
Yeah.
And I took this thing out, shooting it on wobble trap and, you know, just some clay targets and stuff like that. And I can shoot this gun as well as I can shoot my old trap gun.
Sure.
And the idea is, if you think about this, Fred, prior to, say, Vietnam, our era, all military rifles had a walnut stock.
Sure.
They look like a conventional rifle that you would go hunting with. Originally bolt action, then they got into semi-automatics, that kind of thing. And that configuration hasn't ever changed until the AR-15. And when the AR-15 came up, I mean, it's totally different look, different feel, everything. Well, there's no reason to say that shotguns have to look like your grandpa's shotgun.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I think you and I, we're not going to get converted. We're going to be back there shooting our old double barrels, whatever else.
Sure.
But the new guys coming up, if they can get a gun like this, and we've got it, this has a two-round magazine in it, so it's legal for waterfowl hunting. But we also have a little adapter, so it holds an extra two-round magazine. And if you're good enough, you can shoot your three rounds, drop the magazine, turn it over, slap the other one back in there and hit the release and get two more shots.
How fun. Cool.
Spring goose hunting, this would be...
Yeah, well, the thing is, that's for duck hunting. For the spring snow geese, where there's no limit and there's no magazine capacity restriction, we got a 10-round magazine goes in. So
now, is this on the market?
It we just got this thing finished. The shotgun is.
Wow.
And with our company, Small Arms Technologies, we're selling that gun. But this rib section, we're just getting that going, the production on it. But we should have it in the next few weeks here, you know, and have it up and going.
Well, we got the prototype here.
Well, I know. Actually, Fred, I'm going to make you one.
Oh, no. Well, my birthday's coming right up.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to give you the gun. You go shoot it, and then you let me know.
Well, you know, I used to go to Mound City, Missouri, and shoot targets on Thursday nights. And I went in there one time, and it was some of the best target shooters in the world were in Mound City, Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
The Diggses and all those guys. And the first time I went up there, some guy had a rib built up on a gun like this. It was 5 inches off of the top of the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
And I looked down, it would look like a space age, like a Sputnik back in those days. Mm-hmm. And I went, can I shoot that? And that was Cliff was the guy's name, remember, if I think right. I took that gun out and ground every target that I shot at. And it made me a better shooter because I got my head up. And I was looking down the barrel better, and I was seeing the whole target better.
I'll be darned. Wow.
And so that kind of, and when you went to big-time shooting target places like Vegas and all this stuff, those guys would show up with those 3- and 4-inch ribs up off top of the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
the deal. We got to take a little bit of a break. We are brought to you by my favorite sponsor, Reed Chevrolet. They're the greatest humans to ever walk the face of the earth. If you're looking for a used, new, or indifferent, the greatest rebates will ever be offered on Chevrolet products is right now. Besides that, you're going to enjoy these people. You're going to like doing business with them. They are so laid back and easygoing. If you can't buy a truck up there, there's something wrong with you. They will save you one great big sack of nickels. So go by and see my buddy Trevin, all the guys up there. You're going to have a ball. Well, you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, we are brought to you by the 50-year of ammunition is the HSM Hunting Shacks Montana. My good friend Boyd Metz, who is involved with this, and I've been harping about this low recoil ammunition. This stuff is absolutely unbelievable. If you have not shot this stuff, it will make you a better shooter for you guys getting ready for the Great Deer War, which is not too far away, and you're sighting in your rifles. Check this out. It made me a better shot, which is almost impossible. But I've got it in a 243 and a little recoil, and 53% less felt recoil. So as you get older, I don't care who you are, though, do you want to get hit with a 4-pound hammer or an 8-pound hammer? Well, yeah. If you're going to get hit by a 4-pound hammer.
I'm getting some this week, and we're going to sight in Junior's 30-06. So I'm really anxious to, because I'm that way. I just kind of cringe, you know, because I know what's coming when you pull that trigger.
Sure,
and I hate it. I do. So I can't wait to try this. I just can't wait.
Well, this HSM in the low recoil, 243, 277 millimeter on 8, 7 mag, 308 Winchester, 30-06 Springfield, 300 Win mag, and the bigger the gun, the better you appreciate it. So this low recoil ammunition is going to knock. And they got a new announcement. Boyd's coming on the show here in about 2 or 3 weeks. And there's a big, big announcement in this company. Something happened to them and something changed. And they're going to announce it right here on the air.
Really?
In probably 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. A new load, a new development. Unbelievable. It's available at Cabela's. It's available at Bass Pro. Go in there and ask for HSM, very competitively priced, I might add. You would think this is basically a hand-loaded bullet, but it is a very, very competitive price. In fact, I even found it cheaper, which HSM, than I did the Winchester or the Remingtons.
Oh, awesome.
So, great product. The brass is better. The primers are better. Bullets are better. Sierra Bullets, and they've really got it going on. I'm so proud that they are a sponsor and being part of us here on the air. So they're just good humans. Ted, I want to talk to you about shotguns. I figure you know more about shotguns than anybody in America right now. Would that you've been around.
That, but I've been in it my entire life, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, since you was in the teens.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
just last week, wasn't it?
A few weeks ago.
I always tell this story to anybody that listens from time to time. Me and Ted were at the SHOT Show in Dallas. We were walking down through the convention center, and Ted thumped me on the shoulder and he said, "Looky there, there's Wesley Richards. Got a booth." And I knew about Wesley Richards. You know, I knew who they were through reading. And so we go down there and we stand around. That was something to see, wasn't it?
You know, Fred, this is dating us, but I think that was back in the 80s, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And Wesley Richards had come to the SHOT Show, and, of course, your booth selection is based on the number of times you've been in the SHOT Show and whatever. So they were down with me in the cheap seats with the turkey calls and the deer rattler horns.
Yeah.
You know? And the guy that was manning the booth was just this straight-back Brit, you know, crisp, tweeds, all that kind of stuff, that looked totally incensed for being there because they're Wesley Richards. Their shotguns at that time started at around $40,000 to $50,000.
What? A piece.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
And while Fred and I were standing there, there were these two Texans, and they were arguing over the advantages of a cocking shotgun over a self-cocking shotgun. A self-cocking shotgun, talking double barrel shotguns here. When you push the brake lever over, it uses the weight of the barrels to cock the shotgun, but you always have to give it just a little bit more for the shells to eject. And then that's a self-cocker. A cocking shotgun, like a Purdy, when you hit the brake lever, the barrels flop open, it ejects the shells, and it cocks on closing. Well, they're arguing about the advantage of one to the other, and they asked this Brit what he thought, and he looked at him straight faced and said, "Well, actually, who loads one's own shotgun anyway, you see?" Because in Britain, you know, you have a loader.
He put them in their place.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I thought they were going to stomp him or something, but, you know, they understood. Yeah. You know, and everybody smiled at that. You know? Yeah.
I'll never forget that. Yeah. One is they were down in the cheap seats.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, down there.
And, you know, you're right. The deer scent and the oozing, dripping leaves, if I'll never forget at the SHOT Show. Yeah, yeah. Guy had dripping leaves that hung onto your bow, and they had full of buck scent, and they would drip out. And I went, oh, my gosh. You know, he was trying anyway. But here these guys are harping a $40,000, $50,000 shotgun.
Yeah. You know, those same guns now, Fred, they're approaching probably 100 grand.
Oh,
yeah. You know, they're
God.
Just,
oh,
yeah. It's really... Really, it's kind of silly, but, I mean, that's the ultimate. I mean, that's like going in and buying a Rolls Royce or something.
Yeah.
If you go in and you order a Purdy shotgun nowadays, it'll take you about 3 years to get one, and they won't guarantee the price on delivery.
Good God.
Yeah, you know.
I'm jealous.
I guess they kind of size you up when you come in to pick it up and figure out how much you can stand, you know.
Yeah.
But,
I talked to a gentleman that, I probably shouldn't say his name, but I talked to a gentleman who ordered a Wesley Richards shotgun. They flew a guy from London, England, to his residence to measure him.
Mm-hmm.
Custom
built.
Custom built gun.
Oh, yeah.
And he took the likeness of his, I think he had a picture of his bird dog or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent it back with these guys, and I think it was almost 2 years or maybe longer before he got the gun back.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it was maybe three, and he had to pay in advance. And mm-hmm. I think this is back many, many years ago, and it was well over $100,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now I saw the gun, and I'm going to tell you what, the likeness that they carved on that gun with that dog was like looking at a picture. It was just pristine as you could get.
But as far as the way it shoots, does it do anything different than any other gun does?
Well, you know, a $100,000 shotgun ought to shoot better. No, you know, I mean, basically a shotgun's a hunk of pipe. You know, yeah. I mean, that's it. You know,
hunk of pipe with a firing pin.
Yeah,
it's all.
You know, when you were talking about that, there was an old guy I knew. He was very wealthy and. He had it was a Holland or a Purdy or whatever, and he was on some hunting trip in, I don't know where it was, but they had the gun in a case on the side of a camel, and the camel fell off a cliff.
What?
And, yeah. Yeah, the camel rolls Sorry, down dog. The mountainside and broke the stock and bent the barrels on his Purdy shotgun. So at any rate... After this trip, he flies through London and goes in there and says, "I want to get my gun repaired." And they looked it over and they went, "Okay." They said, "It'll take about 3 years." Oh, and he goes, "You know, I'm 86 years old." He said, "I might not live 3 years." And the guy looked at him and went, "Well, perhaps, but what of your heirs?"
Well,
no, you know, I mean, the Brits, you know, they are... Snooty, but I mean, that's what you'd expect, isn't it? You know,
oh my goodness. And, I have a good Scotland story. The Scottish people like to take a wee blaze of scooch for breakfast and noon, and the wind's blowing. It's 3 o'clock somewhere.
A day that ends in Y.
Unbelievable. I mean, those guys, and I got to talking to one of them on a cruise ship. He was from Scotland and spelled my name Ramsay. And he was telling me about the Ramsey. They were horse thieves and cattle rustlers. He said, "I can talk to you." He said, "I can't talk to the EY Ramseys." I said, "Well, when all this happened?" He said, 1420. Held a grudge since 1420. I mean, the people over there are different. You know?
Well, Fred, you got to remember, most of our relatives didn't come to the New World because they wanted to.
Yeah.
We got to take a little bit of a break. We are brought to you by Highway Trailer Sales. My good friend Terry Lee. I hope he's laughing. I hope he's listening this morning. He's the finest human that ever walked the face of the earth. We did this advertising commercial and this business with him on a handshake. I wouldn't even think about having a contract with him. He's that straight a guy. So if you guys that are hauling grain right now, I've already seen one truck banged up. Everybody's in a hurry. He understands that you need that trailer back to harvest this corn. And if you guys are driving 18-wheelers, maybe happen to be passing through Kansas City and you got a problem, maybe a leaf spring or bearing, this guy will bend over backwards. They got 10 bays up there. They are located at 1850 Southern Road. And I guarantee you can do business with him on a handshake. He's that kind of guy. They got sales, service, and parts at 1850 Southern Road. That's just west of World of Funnel, 435 up here. It's real easy to get to. But go by and see these fantastic people. I can't say enough good things about them. I've talked to too many farmers that have had problems with their trailers, and they stopped everything they were doing and put them back in the field. So that's the kind of service you get. Highway Trailer Sales, again, they are located at 1850 Southern Road. Now, I'm going to give you a cell phone number that goes directly to Terry Lee. That's how kind of guy he is. 816-769-3658. 816-769-3658. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. In the studio, my co-host, the greatest fisherman to walk the face of the earth, Mark Tobin. Did you know that?
No.
Okay. You're Jackson County's answer to Harold Inslee. And Ted Hatfield, and we're talking about Hatfield shotguns and all the stuff. We were talking about Wesley Richards. I've been around for a couple weeks, haven't I?
Yeah. You know, these guys all go back into the at least the 1800s, a lot of them back into the 1700s or even before. So, yeah, it's a long tradition of shotguns, and they started out making these things even in flintlocks, and they really helped develop the flintlock, which we associate with the modern with the old Kentucky rifle.
Sure.
And they made double barrel shotguns with flintlocks. And the big thing was trying to get these things to shoot in the rain, because the big sport, which it is still today, is on August 12th, the glorious 12th, to go to Scotland to shoot grouse.
Yeah.
And it's always raining and cold and foggy up there, and your flintlock quite often won't go off. And so, you know, they went through all of this stuff to develop it. Well, the flintlock was on lock plates that actually went into the side of the gun. So as shotguns developed and they took the hammer off the outside and put it on the inside, they were still what we call side-lock guns. You know, to have a British best-grade gun, it has to have locks like that. Wow. It can't be the standard action like we think of.
How many you got?
I don't have any, but I've got to change gears just a minute. We were talking off the air, and this is just too funny. I'm sorry. I have to talk about fishing just for a second. You know, you're talking about Brother Dick down there catching all these trout on these little flies, and you can put four of them on a dime. They're so small. And, Ted, you were talking about Gary Loomis going. Where was it that he was fishing for these sea run trout?
Well, Taman.
Taman.
Yeah, a Taman is a trout. And they get really big.
Well, we talk when talking about catching trout, you want to match the hatch. Not quite the same when you're talking about.
As I said, they have these in the rivers in Mongolia. And I was talking to a guy that was over there fishing. He said the locals' favorite lure to use is not a fly that you can get 10 on a dime. They use half a squirrel.
That's just hysterical.
When Gary was over, he said he didn't take big enough equipment.
No, he went. Now, this was quite a few years ago. When he first started going over there, he found this river that the big sea run Taman come into, because they're like a steelhead. They'll go to sea. And, well, steelhead is just a rainbow trout that goes to sea. But at any rate, these Taman get huge. I'm talking about well over 100 pounds.
Wow.
And he took all this equipment with him and went over there, because, of course, in Russia you can't get anything. And I talked to him when he came back, and I said, how'd you do it? He said, they tore up everything we had. That's a good problem to have when you go fishing.
Use half a squirrel.
Yeah. Or maybe ran out of squirrels, I guess.
That's different.
Oh, my. You know, oh, Tobin, he'd be the end of you.
Oh, boy, wouldn't it?
You would die right there in the river.
Yeah, with a smile.
You know, Gary told me something. He said when he was over there fishing, he was walking on rivers that no one had ever put a footprint in. And he said it was so pristine, it's so undeveloped, you never hear an airplane, you never see a human. And he said the fishing was so phenomenal. He said it's just one of those things you put on your bucket list because, you know, it's just something you got to do in a deal. Mm-hmm. Man, he's got the equipment. He's got the rods. You know, I mean, he's got the finest equipment that there is, but he couldn't handle them things, could he?
No, and I tell you, if I was going to go over there, you know, I would definitely have a conversation with Gary because he can tell you what to take because, believe me, I have been to Russia, and if you didn't take it with you, you're out of luck. They don't have anything there.
Now, we were talking about, and go back to shotguns, because I want to pick what's left of your brain.
That won't take very long.
Well, we went through the 60s, you know. We were talking about Wesley Richards, and you talk about 1780 probably. Uh-huh. I don't know, but probably right in there, not too far away. Are they the front runner? Was it Holland and Holland? Did Parker come into the play? Do you know?
Well, you know, Parker, they would look down on because Parker was actually a box lock action.
Yes.
It wasn't a lock plate action. And Wesley Richards actually technically didn't fall into the category of conventional lock plates. But to be a best grade English gun, it has to have thumb removable or hand removable lock plates. Where that came from is back in the olden days, the springs weren't that good. So if you got a good shotgun, you could get an extra set of locks made for it. So if you're out there on the driven chute and one of your mainsprings break, you could pull out another lock plate and put in.
Slap her in.
So Wesley Richards, instead of having the conventional lock plates, had drop locks. They drop out of the bottom. The whole mechanism drops out of the bottom, which made them kind of unique. But, they're one of the top makers there.
I hunted with Rahil Nanan. I'm probably butchering his name. He was the prince of Pakistan, and he had a Wesley Richards shotgun. And he took the side plate off of it and let me look at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was like a jeweler's watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked inside that thing, and I bet he thought, well, you dumb Missourian. My jaw fell open. I've never seen such craftsmanship. And now here's the way I looked at that gun. This was not off a CMC machine. This was done by hand back in the old days on this thing.
Yeah, that's where the difference is.
Yes.
When it comes down to modern guns, whether it's Wesley Richards, Purdy, or any of them, they're all done on computer numerically controlled machining centers and CNCs. And we actually went into that business. Do you remember those fancy sidelock guns that Kimber had?
Sure.
We made those.
Yeah.
In our factory, and the inside of the locks looked like the inside of a high-end watch.
You sure did.
They're really beautiful things, and that's done today with CNC. It's not that difficult to do. Back in the olden days, all of that, the jeweling and everything, was done by hand.
Yeah.
And so, you're looking at a work of art there.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we were talking off the air here. The shows are better off there than they are on. But these guys that worked on these guns back for Wesley Richards on Holland, they were the file man. They were the engraver. They didn't work on that was their job, was engrave all day long, 8 hours a day, and they didn't work on the lock. They didn't work on the barrel. They were professional engravers.
Well, yeah, what they had in the trade was they had an apprentice program, and there were different job descriptions, one of which was filer, and that guy used the file. But he could take off a half a thousandth of an inch with a file, you know. Wow. And when they were fitting the actions to the barrels to the actions, you know, well, that's where the filer or actioner came in. And he couldn't engrave. He couldn't do any woodwork. What he did was fit the barrels to the action. So, you know, that was the way it was.
I've got a sponsor, King City Lumber. I've got to get them in here, but they have a nailer. this guy here, all he does is drive nails all day long, you know. But these are the most professional people you'll ever do business with. King City Lumber up in King City, Missouri, kingcitylumber.com. I was in one of their buildings again the other day. It's about 20-some years old. Looks like the day they built it. If you guys need a cabin in the woods or whatever you're looking for, there is no finer people than King City Lumber. So go by and look at their website. You'll be on it about 20 minutes. Parker Shotguns, what's that all about? Where'd that start, you know?
Yeah, well, that all came out of Gun Valley up, you know, in Connecticut. And the original Parker Shotguns, done by the Parker brothers, and they were our best line of shotguns. Now, arguably L.C. Smith or Parker that all came along at that same time. But, of course, they were a different type of gun. They did not have the craftsmanship that you would have seen in the comparable British guns at the time.
But they still put out a quality piece.
Oh, they're excellent. I mean, a lot of handwork. I mean, they're pretty much a hand-built gun, all of them were.
Now, the double rifles, and I call them double rifle shotguns, which they're not, but the elephant guns. I mean, where do we go on that? Do you know who was the first one to kind of put that together? That goes way back, too, doesn't it?
It does. It's the same companies. When the British were going to Africa, and mainly the ones that we would think of were not actually going there originally hunting. They were going there searching for the for the source of the Nile River.
Sure.
And quite often, as they would go off on those, they would pop into Purdy's or Wesley Richards or someplace and have a rifle made for them so they could pot a few elephants while they are there and that kind of thing. And they started out with the big bore guns in a single barrel, and then they evolved to the double barrel rifles.
Yeah.
And those are hugely expensive.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. They are really something.
Yeah.
But, those were works of art themselves too.
And those guys wanted the biggest bullet that mankind could stand behind, because there's nothing worse than a thundering elephant coming at you or a Cape buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
You got to put the stop on him, and as in right now, RATT, right now, you know. This gets real serious real quick. So that goes back to, you need a gun, you know, you're putting your life in the hands of that rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And you better have one that performs at that time.
Oh, yeah, the wonderful old story about a guy named Sir Henry Baker or something like that, off searching for the headwaters of the Nile, had this gun built that shot a one-ounce bullet. You're talking a bullet with an explosive head on it. And this was a massive gun, a single barrel, and he referred to it as Baby. That's what he named it. And he said, the first time he shot it, he said, the elephant broke from the brush. I threw Baby to my shoulder, pulled the trigger, and he said it embedded the cock, which is the top of the hammer, into the bridge of my nose and spun me around like a weathercock.
We need a low recoil version of that.
Oh, you? Unbelievable.
I would never shoot it again.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I probably didn't. He probably went to an institution right after that.
I've been talking with our good friend Kelly Kurtz, and I sent him a picture of this gun, this AR-15 style 12-gauge, and he has to have one. He wants to know if he can have this one. But he wants to know where they're available. And the gun is available already, but it doesn't have the rib sight on it.
It doesn't have the rib yet.
Right.
That's what we're getting made. That'll be an accessory. The gun comes standard with regular AR-15 sights on it that are on this Picatinny rail on top. It comes with them on there, and you just take those screws, take those off, and put the rib on.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, and they're available, like, here in Kansas City. I think every gun shop in Kansas City sells it.
How much does the gun retail for, approximately?
You know, I think it's around $550, something like that.
Wow.
And the rib, any idea what that's going to retail for? And when will that be available?
We're working on it right now with our manufacturer. I don't have the pricing back, but I think as an accessory, it's going to run around $100.
Cool. That's an awesome looking gun. Oh. Kelly has to have one.
Oh, well, he's not normal anyway. He's, well, he's you'll have to have everything.
In a lot of ways.
But this has got so much merit to it. You know, it is changing your thinking. Old guys like us will not change. We got to have our head down the stock and take the recoil. But this will come straight back when you pull the trigger.
Well, the barrel is directly in line with your shoulder.
Shoulder.
So a couple of things happen. One, you don't get any barrel rise out of it. And second, it doesn't kick you in the face.
Yeah.
It's just pushing back on your shoulder. So you actually think you have less recoil with this. You don't.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact is, with it just coming directly back, you don't have that barrel rise. You don't have it kicking you in the cheek. And you're really faster on getting in that second shot.
You know, one of the things I wanted to touch on while you were here, all my buddies have bought a Hatfield semi-automatic shotgun now. And I'm not hearing a complaint.
No, actually, the guns work really well.
Yeah.
You know, we're second to none as far as a warranty service. Now, we make a lot of those guns. I mean,
lots of
huge numbers. And we take care of the customer. And of course, Walmart is one of our big customers.
Sure.
And they're real happy with us because they don't have anybody come bringing anything back in the store. They have a problem, they call us.
Yeah.
We take care of it. And we have very low return, and they're just a pretty good shotgun.
Well, let's tell it like it is, $198 shotgun.
Right.
Yeah, that's incredible.
For a gun that functions like this at that level, the guys were shooting at dove hunting. Mm-hmm. The guys were shooting it a little while ago, or mm-hmm. yesterday or day before. I talked to a guy yesterday shooting one with teal.
Mm-hmm.
It cycled. He said, for $198, he said, I would stop in between and just kind of admire the guy. He just got it. And he said, you know, it was just a wonderful piece of equipment.
Well, the thing is that we're talking walnut stock, checkered, sure. Ventilated rib, comes with three chokes. I mean, you get the same thing there as you do for a gun that costs $2,000. And they shoot well. They function well. If you got a problem with it, you call us, you know. So, yeah,
And he's getting older like I am, and he bought that gun, and he said the trigger was good.
Mm-hmm.
And that means so, as you get older, you know, its trigger is everything in that shotgun, whether it's mm-hmm. a rifle or shotgun, either way. But he just, I mean, I've never heard such accolades in my entire life as this guy yesterday. He called me unannounced. And we talked for 10, 15 minutes on the phone about this shotgun.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Because we do put a lot of effort in that. You know, and we're actually working on other guns and stuff all the time. And, you know, I've been in the business, as you know, my entire life. And if you're going to make one, it's just as easy to make one right as it is to make one wrong.
Exactly.
And if you make one right, you got a happy customer and you don't see that gun again.
Yeah.
Right.
Is it available in 20?
20 and 12-gauge semi-automatic, 12-gauge. Yeah.
Also, when I turned on my cell phone the other day, there was an article about your what they called a survival gun, your single-shot shotgun.
Yeah, we're doing that. We actually don't have that on the market. We had some stuff leak out about it. It's a little 410 single barrel that just kind of folds in half and goes in a little in a little cloth case with some shell loops in there so you can put in some extra 410 ammunition. And also a zip bag to put in, you know, compass and flares and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Something to throw under the seat of your car or take on a backpack trip, you know, or float trip or whatever.
Yeah.
That's a little survival gun.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's the one single shot sells $99.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
$99.
Right. Yeah. So it's not going to break the bank there. You don't have to worry about that.
And, you know, it's a $99 shotgun. Let's just tell mm-hmm. it like it is. You know, it's a $99 shotgun.
Uh-huh. And
it's very adequate. It's like what you grew up with as a kid hunting rabbits.
Yeah. Actually, when we developed that gun, we did a couple of things. One, that has an action bar safety. So you have to hold the trigger back when you cock it by hand. You have to hold the trigger back for the thing to hit the firing pin. But also, since you're going to train kids with it, we put a regular cross bolt safety, too.
Good.
So you can teach a kid how to operate a shotgun.
Yeah. Well, Ted, I enjoyed it. I hope our listeners enjoyed it, our three listeners. We got
some
three.
Good stories.
Yeah, some good stories. Some of them are true, you know. What the hey? I wanted to get into the charging Cape Buffalo thing. Neil Aldridge and the boys got into that time, but we didn't have time. But maybe come back someday.
I'd love to, Neil, Fred. Yeah, you know, maybe we'll get Neil in town. That'd be good. Yeah,
oh, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
To have him. Yeah, my goodness. Mark, you going fishing today?
I am going to go. I just can't stand this weather. I got to be outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to go fish.
I'm going to go fish.
Thank goodness. I was worried about you. You were working 7 days a week here at one time.
You know, got to go out there and check these Jackson kayaks out at Sportsman's Outfitter Marine. There's a lot of little small and county lakes, state lakes that you can't get. Oh, and they've got this one out there that you can paddle.
Yeah.
A lot of people are putting their boats up for the winter, and there's no better place out there than Sportsman's Outfitter Marine to get your boat serviced. So get out there and put it to bed if you want. But I'm telling you, it's not time for me.
If you got to put your boat up for the winter, go see Joe.
Yep, absolutely. But to check out some of those kayaks, you can paddle them. They've got paddle, or you can put a little motor on them.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Go Chiefs! Have a great week.